Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, October 26, 2021, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And as many of you have heard us say more than once, an anatomy of oppression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And every single thing we discuss is what capitalism is. And everything we criticize is what oppression does. It's the result of a capitalist colonial system. So without further ado, Mr. Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. And this evening we say, the key to American capitalism is nigger, nigger, nigger. From chattel slavery to the Dixiecrats through the white man's party, that's the Republican, it cuts through everything, including the $1 trillion New Deal. And so you may say, that's really simplifying everything. So let me try to give a little bit of history that puts light on that subject. During the Vietnam War, people began to question the truth of the American government. And they had an idea that maybe we shouldn't be in Vietnam, but there's only one way to deal with it. It's in the streets, because there isn't real democracy, because the government that supposedly represents us does not. So how does that happen, that the heads of most of the major institutions of government is led by conservatives, even Democrats? We call them Dixocrats, and they're the main culprits. Strom Thurmond, when they got rid of Adam Powell and the Ways and Means Committee, that was the last thing in their way, because he had served the longest. Well, who serves the longest in the South? That is those senators and Congress folks who say, nigger, nigger. They are conservative. They are big on funding the Pentagon, the Army. They are big at war. They are big on foreign imperialism. And so right up through today, this is how people get elected. That's why the government is at a standstill. There are people in the government who have said that over and over again. And I heard the other night a Muslim comedian say he feels bad because other people's oppression is they have smoke on it. Otherwise, nobody says nigger, nigger anymore. They say, make America great again, and everybody understands what that means. Keep people of color in their place. And Mr. Trump, although Mr. Trump made it clear and people supported him, people still support him. He's not gone yet. And even if he is gone, close to half of the people of America believe in that, those words, nigger, nigger, nigger. Don't let those people have an even shot at this corrupt imperialism, this corrupt colonialism, this disgusting colonialism that exists within the United States. We in the community of color are merely a colony within the borders of the United States, as opposed to Haiti, or as opposed to in Africa, or as opposed to Palestine. We are merely a colony within the American borders, and all of the rules and regulations of colonialism apply to us. And this is what we're trying to do, give examples as to, if we don't understand the problem, we can't ever get the answer. And one of the things that we pointed to last week, the gentleman who shot at the president, et cetera, and killed some Hinckley, is out. And our people who fought for freedom are still in. And we can't arouse the people to make them understand what that means, to fight for those who sacrificed everything for the rest of us. And what does that mean as a government who says there are no political prisoners? What does that mean? And I always refer to what Sekou Odinga said a long time ago before going to serve his 34 years, 36 years, 37 years, and I don't want to underplay that. I know it was a long, long time, and you don't want to be there serving that time. But one of the things he said is that we know they're political prisoners, and they know, because they don't treat criminals this way. And is there any better example? Hinckley, a criminal, gets better treatment, better consideration than those of color. And those without color, those who fought for freedom, he gets better treatment than all of those people. Tommy Manning died in the death camp. Richard Williams died in the death camp. What was their crime? Supporting the movement. for freedom for all people in America. And so we call out the names over and over again, and people still do not understand. So this evening we hope to bring some education and understanding, and I myself look forward to this program every week because I get educated more and more, things that I didn't know. And, well, without further talk on things I didn't know, we're going to have our people explain. There's going to be poetry, education through poetry with Professor Louie. We have Sister Nzinga who's going to give us poetry. And so, and a long list of people who want to tell us what we don't know, try to give us understanding. So let me get off and turn the microphone over to Sister Betty Davis. Sister Betty.
As you know, we talk about liberation poetry and the liberation of making words sound like music. So without further ado, Professor Louie, it is an honor to have you as part of this rounding up the usual suspects. Your mic is open. Welcome.
What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question I'm going to ask. What does it mean to be working class? Because today you say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor. Your car needs gas. You're still paying off your college class. What you owe your credit card is never passed. Still you're middle class this and middle class that. Upper lower middle class till you eat your hat. Got the gap on your back. You got a little fat. You're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Or was middle class just a little dream made up for you on your TV screen where everybody's comfy, or so it seems, and no one ever eats rice and beans? Because in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the big money, and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There are still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, every deal could cost you a meal, and for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We clean the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did. No matter what your color or your name, no matter the country from where you came, the name of the game is still the same. And if the owner works, is he working class? Got his laptop and smartphone, he's moving fast. It all depends, first and last. If he owns a bodega or a little machine shop, he works for his money, and he works a lot. He might be working for everything he got, but the guy who owns the corporation, he could work all day. It won't change him. He might be a nice guy. He might be a jerk. He makes his big money off of other people's work. You can't make millions going to work and getting paid. You need other people's work to really have it made. When we punch the clock, he owns the stock. We do the labor. He gets the flavor. We make the honey, but he takes the money because working people make everything. We're the ones make the cash register ring. And when our work goes to someone else's profit, it. Now you got it, and you don't got to ask. That's what makes us working class. And if I talk about class just a little more, your TV says we're starting class war. But the real news has come and gone. The class war is always on. It has been here since the day you were born. We just need to know whose side we're on. If we don't know our own class, take it from the poet. We will always take a beating, and we won't even know it, because your TV is programmed by the owning class, your newspaper programmed by the owning class, your search engine programmed by the owning class. When we don't know we're working class, the owning class will kick our ass. They get a real free pass. Of course, you get no health care. You get lousy schools. The TV brings your kids up to act like fools. You get no union. You lose your job. You vote for politicians who think you're a slob, because we sometimes forget there's a bottom and a top, those who got it and those who do not. Better to remember, make no mistake, if you're not an owner, you're a worker, and that's the breaks. And I bet there's nobody listening here who made $10 million just this year. So before I waste any more breath, before I talk myself to death, let me ask you to act on a fact that has come to pass. Your ass is in the working class. And before we get to another day when we open our mouths with something to say, before you speak and the words are gone, it's good to know whose side you're on and what it means to be working class. Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question we got to ask. What does it mean to be working class? And one last little question before I'm gone. Tell me, whose side are you on?
Thank you, Professor Louis. Is what I say, education with entertainment. And I hope that has educated a few more people, because it is something special. Sister Betty.
We want to thank Professor Louis, because that's the other theme we have for tonight. We're hoping one of our guests, a union organizer, from California, will be getting on to discuss the whole issue of working class and some issues that have been taking place in terms of American capitalism. Right now, we're going straight to our next poet, Nzinga. Are you in the house?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me, and thanks to that brother, because when I come after him, it's like we're on the same page. So the title of my poem, can you hear me?
We hear you perfectly. Continue, please.
Good. Okay. So the title of my poem is Why We Fight. We fight for the ancestors and the abuses they struggled and died to overcome. We fight in remembrance of those for whom the government relied to bring to them their untimely demise. We fight because we see the endless in here and across the seas on so many innocent human beings. We fight because we know that it won't be long before righteousness and justice will supersede wrong. We fight to keep our dignity in the face of genocide, joblessness, homelessness, and poverty. We fight to combat the evil that pervades this land and places far too much power into the wrong hands. We fight for a good education and a decent life for our children. We fight for clean and safe neighborhoods for them to live in. We fight to protect them, save them from abuse, while the government hides behind closed doors, perpetuating their misuse. Simply put, we fight because we must, and we can never give up, for anything less will not be discussed. Thank you again, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And there's a little more education as to what we're about. And to go on to what we are about, we have Sister Ann Lamb on from the Jericho, New York, to talk about what has happened recently. Ann, your mic is open.
Oh, thank you so much, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty. I always say, honor and a privilege to be with you. You are my inspiration for many things. All right, we're going to start out with some good news about political prisoners. In case people have not heard the news, the New York State Parole Board voted to release David Gilbert.
And all right.
We got that news today. And in response, Jose Saldana, director of the Release Aging People in Prison campaign, released the following statement. We support the parole board's decisions to release incarcerated people who have served decades in prison and pose no risk to public safety. The purpose of parole is to evaluate people for release based on who they are today, not to extend sentences into perpetuity. Mr. Gilbert spent decades in prison creating rehabilitative programs and has been an unparalleled positive influence on the lives of countless incarcerated people. There is no doubt that he will be an asset to his community. This and other recent decisions the parole board has made based on those principles are the right ones. So that's good news. Of course, he's not out of prison yet, but he should be fairly soon. And I was very happy to see that. And then on Monday, yesterday, Judge Kai Scott, the same judge who had previously denied Russell Maroon Schultz's petition for a medical transfer to hospice care, was forced to change her mind. And I would like to go into a little bit of detail about that. Dr. Barbazella, as people may know, Dr. Barbazella is and has been a Jericho doctor for many years, providing medical support to many of our political prisoners very steadfastly. We love Dr. Zeller. And Dr. Zeller, in my opinion, and I called her to tell her this yesterday, thank you for saving Maroon's life, because the family didn't know and the legal team didn't know that he needed to have a thing called total parenteral nutrition, which is done by IV, but it's not done by IV the normal way. It goes in, it's a deep venous IV. But this provides nutrition for people who have bowel blockages and cannot eat or drink anything, which is Maroon's situation. Now, Maroon was in a hospital. He went back to the prison, and they were not giving him even fluids, and they were certainly not giving him this TPN. So he was totally dehydrated, and the doctor at the prison, whose name is Dr. Prince, refused to give him this treatment. Now, it may turn out that they do not have the capacity to do that. I do not know. But basically, this doctor, so-called, was saying, oh, we'll just let him starve to death. So when Dr. Zella spoke with Teresa, and Teresa spoke with Maroon's legal team from the Abolitionist Law Center, who have been stellar, and this all happened over the past weekend, they got this expedited hearing, right? So Dr. Zella reported that Maroon needs to have both the IV nutrition but also a suction tube system on his stomach to remove fluid buildup, all right? The judge asked if she knows if FCI Dallas does or does not have the capability to provide this care, and Dr. Zella answered she does not, but she did testify to the level of dehydration he was experiencing after one day back at the prison last week, okay? So that was Dr. Zella. Maroon himself testified at this hearing. He was very apologetic for the actions he took against the victims. He talked about his rage and humiliation that defined his life from when he was a child and how the rage is gone. He talked about learning resistance without rage, with patience, that he has a better chance of changing his situation in that way. He talks about how he is Muslim, that he prays five times a day. At night, when he can, he believes he will be judged for his actions and that he cannot hide from the Creator. And then Dr. Elliot Atkins was the forensic psychologist who did a test also. And Dr. Atkins reports from the HARE test that Maroon scored a 2. The threshold for high risk is a 30+. All other scores were extremely low or 0. He reported that Maroon has changed hugely because of his acceptance of religion and the prison institution since his last escape attempt. He declared no reported behavioral issues for the past 20-plus years. None of these risk assessments took Maroon's medical conditions into account. The assistant DA had asked Maroon if he was in a wheelchair and how he could get from a bed to a wheelchair, and he responded that he needed to be lifted into the wheelchair by several people. She asked if his condition would improve. He answered that he hoped so, that friends and family could get whatever time he has left, but he did not know if his condition would improve. So then the judge, who did not want to make this decision, ordered that Maroon be released and be transferred. Well, he's not really released. He's still under doc supervision. He has to wear an ankle bracelet. but he will be released to hospice care in his sister's house, not state hospice care. So that was the good news of yesterday. And then today, there was some little tension going on because he was supposedly leaving the prison at 1:30, and at 3:30 he still was not known where he was. So Teresa had to get on the horn with the with Brett and Nia from the Abolitionist Law Center so they could see what was going on. And what was going on was, which is a strange thing that I've never heard before, that the ambulance that was to take him from the prison to the hospital, which I believe is in Philadelphia, is not allowed to cross county lines. I have never heard of such a thing. But anyway, so they had to arrange, you know, alternative transportation, which they managed to do. So the last I Teresa has just been texting me right now. If I can figure out a way to text and stay on the phone at the same time, I will. But anyway, the last I heard is he is okay. The legal team is not releasing his actual whereabouts until tomorrow. I was like, that's fine. I don't need to know where he is. We just need to know that he's okay. So this is a major, major victory that people have been working on for a long, long time, is to bring Maroon home, as people probably know. Oh, I have a nice statement here from the Free Maroon Now Coalition, very short. Maroon has been in prison for over 49 years now and suffers rapidly deteriorating health due to the stage 4 colorectal cancer. His condition is terminal and requires palliative care that involves parenteral nutrition through IV, which the PA doc has neglected to provide. Effective immediately, Maroon will be transferred from SCI Dallas to emergency care at an outside hospital that will evaluate his current state of health and provide the necessary assessments to begin home hospice care. This concludes a decades-long campaign, and it is a major victory for the abolitionist movement. We are grateful for the diligent work by Maroon's family, absolutely. They have been doing this for many years. The Abolitionist Law Center, Reed Smith, and countless friends and supporters. In love and in prayer and solidarity, the Free Maroon Now Coalition, of which, of course, we are a part. So this is excellent news. I don't know on this phone if I can actually see these texts or not, but I will look and see, and if I get disconnected, I will call back in. I have a new phone. I haven't figured it out quite yet. As we speak. So if I have any little update, I'll text you and let you know so you can let me back on. But this is
thank
great
you.
News. 2 days in
it
a
is
row.
Great.
Yeah.
And it is sad news at the same time. Love to have our brothers and sisters out. I am saddened that we took so long to bring pressure, to put pressure on the government to do the right thing. Welcome home, David. Welcome home, all political prisoners who are freed. Thanks again, Ann.
All right. From time to time, we will be extending the broadcast because the number of people who are calling in with emergency announcements or updates has been increasing. We have some special guests from the Green Party who will be giving us a report. And before we go, though, we want to open up the mic for Sister Gwen. Sister Gwen, your mic is open.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Betty. I'm glad that we're getting prisoners out, but the focus of my conversations recently, as you all know, have been about the COVID vaccine. And I think that we are at a different place in the world right now, and I think that it's very urgent that we look at the bigger picture. In my opinion, it doesn't really matter anymore who you vote for, whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican. There is a shift in a world government that wants to control all of us, and that makes us all political prisoners. And I was speaking to a fellow today that was talking about what happened at when Yugoslavia became free, and they couldn't control the people anymore. And because it's an all-white country, they didn't know how to really divide them, get them to work against each other. But then they realized they had religion. They had three religions. They had Christianity. They had the Muslim faith. And there was one more. And so, you know, that didn't just end up in a division of political speak, that ended up in an all-out war. And, you know, while that was happening, the government was profiting at the losses of people. And I think that it's really amazing to me that people on the left, and I am on the left, do not recognize what is happening and how we are being pitted against one another. And so you have people that I've been listening to for years on WBAI radio as, again, saying the most vicious things to other people that they don't know, and they don't even know how they became into the camp they're in when it comes to the vaccine, saying such malicious things. And so it's really hard to be out here, right, and not really know where your folks are anymore, because you really can't identify them. But, you know, today I was sitting in the car with my friend Brock, and he was telling me that the phone was ringing off the hook, and I said, why? He said, because I have all my friends from prison. My friend was in Attica, in the Attica riots. And he said, all my friends from prison are calling me, and they're going crazy because they just heard that Anthony Fauci has not taken the vaccine. I said, right, and his wife didn't either. And guess what? Congress has exempted themselves, their families, their staff, and their staff's families from having to take the vaccine. And 200 members of Congress took ivermectin when they did get sick with the virus. So how come this is happening like this? How come we have these people that are running the show who don't take their own medicine, but they're literally forcing on us? And this week, at the end of the week, we're going to see a lot of people that are going to not be paid. I can't believe I heard de Blasio on the radio saying that he is not going to pay people when they show up to work unless they take the vaccine. I mean, I've never seen anything like this in America, but I think that the hardest part for me to deal with is the fact that people that are on the left that I've always thought champion the underdog are actually whipping the underdog, kicking him into shape, and can't understand that they're being used. We are both being used, pitted against each other, to give the powers that be even more control than they already have. So I just want to keep putting this message out there, and I also want to say that there is everybody here, I'm sure, listens to WBAI, and I happen to feel that whether I like Gary Noll's personality or not, he is one of the best sources for reputable information. And if you don't know about him, you can listen to him on 99.5 FM at 12 o'clock in the afternoon every day, or you can listen to him on Progressive Radio Network on your computer every day. But I think to just say carte blanche, look, I trust – I've been in jail for my whole life. You know, they locked me up when I was 19. I'm out. And but now, with all the things I know about the government, I'm going to go ahead and trust them with my life and let them stick something in my arm, which is still in the experimental phase. And we don't really know why the government is going crazy with this. We don't know why they're pushing so hard. I've never been offered $100 to take anything in my life. I've never been given a lottery ticket. I've never seen anything like this. And you would think that more people would question this. I mean, just last thing regarding our government and our PSYOPs program. This is probably one of the most expansive PSYOPs program we've had in many, many years. And you know, they started in the 60s and the 70s, and one of the experiments they did was pretty – it was very interesting. They had a little machine in a room, and they put somebody in the room and another person in the other room. And they would tell the person on the machine that when you turn the dial, you're giving the person in the other room an electric jolt. And a lot of them didn't want to electrocute the person, but when they heard the person who was in charge demand that they turn the dial, they did. And what was interesting about this was that 67% of the people that were in this turned the dial, but 33% of them would not turn the dial. They would not listen to that authoritative voice. And I think that people should start listening to the group speak, because the group speak is very powerful and it's also very intimidating. But is the group speak speaking in a rational way? Are they telling you to go along with something that it, deep down you know just can't be right? I mean, if we don't know very much about this vaccine, but we do know this. The injuries of vaccines are 41% underreported. Right now, we know that there have been 2,800 people who have died from taking the vaccine. We know that there are thousands of people that have had injuries. And we know with the undercounting of 41%, there must be thousands of other people that have died from this. Is it a coincidence that Hank Aaron took this vaccine and 17 days later died? He was in perfect health. That's why they chose him.
Gwen.
They chose him to do this. So I'll wrap it up with this. Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Well, thank you for your understanding of what's going on. We're going to have to do a program and spend the whole evening on the program because that's what it's going to take because there is so much misinformation. There is so much information that we do not have, as you have explained, and we're going to have to take a program to get into it. But thanks again, Gwen. We are listening, and we're moving forward. Sister Betty.
I want to say thank you again. We have several guests who've called in, and we are going to extend the time to get them all in because there are so many issues around government control. But let's also recognize, people, that if we have science and we understand science, we can work it out. It's not enough to just say what the government is doing. You've got to be able to show scientifically what the government is doing. We can all feel it, but we have to be able to prove it.
And what's really
Can I just interject on there, please? Hello?
Please,
can I just
briefly.
Just very briefly. I am not just saying it. You can listen to Gary Nolan, you can go to the archives, and they are written. You can find all of these reports. You can go to PubMed and see the reports. There are reports that are out there, and most of them are listed on Gary Knoll's ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com website. So there is plenty of information, but you will not find it on CNN, CNBC, ABC, NBC. You won't even find WBAI.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen. And one of the underlying things which I did not want to get into this evening is the programs of biological warfare that has been going on for 50 more years that we know of, and what its relationship to COVID is. And that's what the government is hiding. But this is not the time for that, and we're going to move to the West Coast to talk about... No, Sister Betty's
taking her
head.
Well, before we go to the West Coast, we want to open up the mic for someone who I always respected as a warrior for political prisoners, as well as someone in the Green Party who fought to change the planet. So at this time, we want to open up the mic for
Professor
Aronowitz, a professor, a CUNY professor, who's written many books. And he's just going to give us a brief discussion about his most recent book. Welcome. Your mic is open, Professor.
Thank you very much. Tony Grinovich, that is. Begins with a G.
Grinovich,
yeah. I just came out with a book called Last Western Empire, A History of U.S. Foreign Policy. And what makes it different from all the other books is that I pinpoint the fact that the government of the United States, from its inception, has always been interested in global domination, in a unipolar world, not living with others, but trying to dominate completely. And I begin with a letter from John Adams to Thomas Jefferson. And those are your two parties. Adams was the Federalist Party, and Jefferson was the Democratic Republican Party. And in that letter, Adams says, you know, we can do it. We can govern the globe. That's my aim. So governing the globe was always the ambition. And to do why they said that, if the British had taken 10 years or 20 years earlier, 30 years earlier, taken over India and Ireland from France, and England is so tiny, the U.S., once it exterminated the Indians or put the remaining ones on reservations and brought in the slaves under the most cruel conditions of any slavery in the Western Hemisphere to produce the raw material that would start industrialization, the cotton factories producing clothing and sails, because this was a time where there was no steam sailing ships. The United States went from not having one factory in 1790 to becoming number two in the world. And once they eliminated slavery and turned the chattel slaves into wage slaves, like the rest of the working class, they proceeded to secure the Western Hemisphere by the Spanish-American War, taking over Cuba and Puerto Rico and Guam in the Pacific and the Philippines. So they were always interested, the power structure here, in ruling the world, in running the world. And they would acted as a refuge for whites in Europe being dislocated by capitalism. But the Republic was always designed for white people. It was never designed for people of color. So it's fortunate today that the majority of the world are people of color, and very soon the majority of the United States will be people of color. And that's what the Trump presidency is all about, what is called the Great Replacement, replacing the majority white with a fairer representation of the world, and therefore the struggle for freedom of and the right to a job with full-time benefits, the right to a free education, health care, and respect for the environment, and of course housing. And we think ahead till January 15th. What are they going to do? They have multiple crises, and they really have no solution. And, of course, the solution rhymes with the word solution. This is it, frankly. Everything else was a dress rehearsal for what we need to do as progressives or revolutionaries who are interested in transforming a system of exploitation and destruction of the environment to a society, finally, that will live up to some of the aspirations that it set forward. The good aspirations, such as providing a society of peace and justice. So that's essentially it. But it was always the plan of the people in power, the Anglo-Americans, who looked to their lineage to England and take pride in their English ancestry to rule the world, to continue what England had started.
Well, thank you for that. But would you give us more on your book and how we can get your book?
The title of it. Last Western Empire, A History of U.S. Foreign Policy. And you can pick it up on Amazon.
Well, we hope to have you back again, and we hope to have many people who have read the book so that we can discuss it and discuss its importance, because this program is about education, and activity, and you are a brave person to pen a book such as that while you are hoping to stay employed within the system. Thanks again. Look forward to talking to you again.
And
Sister
thanks
Betty.
So much, Ralph and Betty. I really appreciate your knowing you all these years and all the wonderful struggles that you've been involved in. Heartbreaking, many of them, but certainly always courageous.
Yes, we could do another program on the battles we have fought, the battles, the few that we have won, and the many that we have lost. But we have been battling for many a year. And I guess it's great to have known you, great to still know you and associate with you. Sister Betty.
One of the reasons I consider Mr. Granowitz so brave is I remember him and Tom and many members of the Green Party. They were the only ones outside the federal building when we were trying so desperately to free Troy Davis. And I remember on many occasions they would come and speak up to Lynn Stewart and her freedom. Comrades like this, you don't forget. So please come back. We've got other books that you have written that people need to know about. We're going to include you as part of our family. Without further
ado.
Thank
you so much.
You're very welcome.
We're going to switch to the West Coast now to talk about the problems that we are having in terms of the getting the produce, getting production into the stores, the tie-up in the chain of goods, the transfer of goods in this country. Steve Zeltser, your microphone is open.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. Thanks, Ralph, for having me on. I'm a producer at Work Week, a show, labor show, and also I help produce COVID Race and Democracy. So I've been covering the Longshore ILWU on the West Coast for many, many years. So when we talk about COVID and how it's affected workers. We should look at the frontline workers, the workers on the docks, and unfortunately in Los Angeles, where the backup is the largest, over 100 ships, they were not prepared to deal with COVID. In fact, they were not provided PPE. There was no education. It was total capitalist chaos. And these shipping companies, the longshoremen have been fighting them for health and safety. But in the case of L.A., this led to the death of 13 longshoremen. Over 700 longshoremen were infected with COVID. And that was one of the causes of the slowdown in Los Angeles, when you had that kind of mass illness among longshoremen. In the Bay Area, there were protests of longshoremen, ILW Local 10, to demand that they have PPE, to demand that cleaners be hired to clean spaces that they work at, so the contamination was less. But the fact of the matter is, in this country, the corporations which control the Department of Labor and OSHA, their captured agencies, have done nothing really to defend working people on the job. In fact, in the United States, there are less than 2,000 OSHA inspectors for the 130 million workers in the United States. And this is under Democrats and Republicans. This is under Obama, and this is under Biden. So there's been no protection of the longshoremen and other workers, frontline workers, at the Foster Farms chicken plant in Merced. 13 farm workers, food processing workers, Latino, Indian, Sikh immigrants died from COVID. The Department of Health in Merced refused to shut down the plant. They're controlled by the owners, the food companies in Central Valley. Another example of what's happening with is that the workers in these warehouses, Amazon warehouses, are unprotected. Now, let's be clear that in China, where they have a zero COVID policy, as well as in Taiwan, they tell the bosses that if you're going to operate, you have to protect the workers. You have to test each worker that comes into the plant. You have to have PPE, and you have to have cleaning, and you have to have proper protection. That's not the case at the Tesla plant in California, even though it has a plant in Shanghai. Workers were contaminated there. They were being sick. They were disappearing. And many of the workers at Tesla in Fremont in California can't afford to live in the Inner Bay Area, so they go by buses. They're bused from the Tesla plant in Fremont to Central Valley, where the rate of infection is very high, with migrant workers and other farm workers. So this shipping crisis and the shipping backlog is a part of this world capitalist crisis. One of the things is that the shipping companies have built more bigger and bigger ships because they only want to go to two ports in the West Coast, Seattle and Los Angeles. And the smaller ports, for example, like Oakland, where you have ILW 10, they don't have any backup of ships, yet they're not moving the ships from Los Angeles to Oakland. So this is a chaotic situation in which the capitalists are manipulating. They want subsidies, the ship owners, not for the workers, but for the owners. And that's what's happening, and it's going to continue to grow, I think, this crisis system, the transportation and the world trade system. The other thing that you have in capitalism is you have just-in-time. The capitalists have not wanted to store their product. They only want to organize so it's available quickly, so they don't have to store it. And that has led to the situation of where disruption, when factories close down because of COVID in Asia, the ships aren't going to have those products. And this is, again, creating a chaotic situation for the transportation system. So the attack on the workers is growing. I mean, and at the same time, workers are fighting back all over the country. We have the largest strike wave in decades in the United States. Philadelphia, the transit workers may be going out. In New Orleans, they're trying to bust the transit workers. They fired the president, Valerie Jefferson, first black woman president in New Orleans. And she was fired because she asked Wiggins, the CEO of the transportation system, for their hazard pay in New Orleans. They had, during the storm, the flooding, and the lights going out, they had promised the transit workers that they would get hazard pay. They refused to pay it, and they fired her, Valerie Jefferson, and now refusing to recognize her and trying to bust the union in New Orleans. So there's a union bust and drive going on, and at the same time, workers are fed up and are striking. And in California, you have a engineer strike at Kaiser Hospitals. More thousands of more workers will be joining the lines. You have the Deere factory workers, John Deere Farm Machinery, UAW. You have the miners who've been on strike over 7 months. In Alabama, you have a strike in Massachusetts of hospital workers. So there's a growing strike wave, and I think what is necessary really is to unite these strikes together and move towards a general strike to shut down the country. The unions, unfortunately, the union bureaucracy in this country support capitalism and they support imperialism, the AFL-CIO. In fact, they support Israel, and they're trying to prevent any resolutions of solidarity for Israel. But we face a situation now where we don't have national health care in the middle of a pandemic, and workers now who are getting COVID, if they don't have health care, they're having to pay COVID bills. There's no mass testing protocol in the United States. Think about this. We're 19 months into this pandemic, and there's no mass testing protocol for workers in this country to find out who has COVID to protect and for people to go into and, you know, to be quarantined. So if you don't even have a mass testing protocol, how are you going to protect people? I think what the Democrats and Republicans are both saying is just live with it. Or the solution is to take vaccines. Now, we know that taking vaccines does not stop the transmission of COVID. In fact, workers who have taken vaccines, nurses, have gotten COVID, and they communicate it. You can have the vaccine, and you can still communicate COVID. So vaccine by itself is not a solution. That doesn't mean that vaccines should not be taken, but you need a public health policy to protect the people of the United States. You need to tell the capitalists you should not be running the healthcare system. The private hospitals and the pharmaceuticals, which pay for the tests that these Pfizer and these companies are using to say we need more testing, cannot be accepted at face value. And that is, I think, what we're facing. And I think we need to learn from the Chinese, from Taiwanese, and in New Zealand and Australia. In Perth, there was a campaign for zero COVID to protect people. Here, the capitalists say, keep working because we have to make our profits, regardless of the cost, the 700,000, 800,000 people who have died. It's probably more. So I think as far as the longshoremen, they continue to be contaminated. In China, they shut down ports to make sure that the contamination does not spread. That's not the case in this country. It's profit over lives, and that is terrible for the working people of this country and the poor and the frontline workers.
Well, thank you so much for that, and I'm sure that everybody knows you're not going to get that on the corporate media. You're not even going to get that on the so-called radical media. Thank you, Steve, and we hope to have you back because this is just the beginning of what's going to happen. And as we discussed earlier, in capitalism, they cut all of the fat, such as warehouses, which were presumed to be fat. And so if you don't have the supply chain operating, then you don't have an economy. And guess what? The supply chain has been cut. Steve will give us more on this in future programs. The warehousing, the little of the fat has been cut, which was perceived as being fat in terms of reducing expenses of warehouses and warehouse workers. And now we begin to see what's happened. We see when there has never been a national health program, and how can they have a solution in a pandemic when there's no national health program?
Absolutely. And we're not going to get it by relying on the Democrats. The working people in this country have to shut things down. That's how they got things in the 30s. They did it by strikes and occupations. There were general strikes. That's what forced Roosevelt to make reforms. The capitalists in this country will only act when they're faced with losing their profits. And they will only lose their profits when workers start shutting things down. That's what we have to do in this country. That's what the unions and workers have to do. And that, I think, is happening because workers are fed up with being basically treated as slaves, slave labor. no health and safety, no protection, and no rights. And that has to change, and it will change. It's already changing.
Thank you so much for that. That's pointing the way to the future. And
thank
we
you,
will continue this discussion and this continued activism.
Steve Elson.
Very good. Take care. Okay.
All right. You need to Google his name. He's in several organizations, and he is a frontline warrior. We don't have people who just say, woe is me. We have people who are in the struggle and who have won some victories. We are very honored to have had you this evening. Thank you for coming on board.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Without further ado, we want to go to a very important announcement. Brother Jihad, the chairman for National Jericho and one of the main instigators, I will say, troublemakers, I will say, launching the tribunal, the Human Rights Tribunal, in the spirit of Mandela. Your mic is open.
Greetings of peace, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and listening audience. I just got home from New York City, back to Richmond, Virginia, where I live. And fantastic news this weekend on many different fronts. But what Sister Betty was referring to is that for the last 2 years or more, the Spirit of Mandela Coalition, which was a coalition called for by recently released political prisoner Jalil Muthi King, out of that coalition, one of the major, the major initiative was the calling for international tribunal committing genocide against the United States, which has been done before. And it's the tribunal is focused on five areas: police violence against black, brown, and indigenous people, mass incarceration of black, brown, and indigenous people, the continued incarceration of freedom fighters, political prisoners, and prisoners of war. Number four was environmental racism, and category five was public health disparities and lack of access, and how all of these categories and more, we're focusing on these because that's what the tribunal brought. All of these charges stood up to the test that in fact, this is historical genocide that's been going on for us for 400 years. And on yesterday, around 12:30, a commission of nine international jurists from all over the world charged the United States government, as represented by its president, Department of State, federal and state policing agencies, and other government institutions. They were found on all five counts guilty of the charge of genocide and human rights violations and abuses against black and brown people and indigenous people. So you may say, well, okay, what does that mean? It means everything. Anybody who's ever uttered the word human rights following the legacy of Al-Haj Malik al-Shabazz, we utter these words, and we never really can get into the international community to effectuate anything, now, including the trips to Geneva and reviewing the human rights treaties, which many probably haven't done, but I have done that also. But in this particular case, we had the eyes of the world from many different countries to the eyes of the jurists looking at our situation, hearing us articulate and prove what has already been proven to each and every one of us listening, but to articulate it and prove this case to the world and have the world through the eyes of the jurists actually be listening and render a verdict of genocide. And this is just not saying, and I'll be brief with this is not just saying human rights violation, because that word has become very bland and it has no power behind it. But when you say guilty of genocide and for an international commission to say this, this puts the United States government and its entities in the same category of demonic figures as the likes of Adolf Hitler, for example. You don't hear the word genocide mentioned too much. In Rwanda, what happened to our brothers and sisters, our Jewish brothers and sisters under Hitler, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and other different cases, because normally genocide can be quantified, and you know, from this period of time to this period of time, this is how many people was killed. You're tracking down the war criminals, some of them still being tracked down today. But in the case of black people in the United States, people of African descent, and brown people, and indigenous people, it's gone on for so many years, centuries, that it's become normalized in front of our own eyes. But we were able to prove that case. And now this case, the verdict and the commentary, which will be, I just got home and traveling all day, will be sent out to Brother Ralph and Sister Betty and to New York Jericho and many other different organizations. We're going to blast it. And somebody, like I said, somebody, well, how can we use this? Well, one of the things that we're going to do besides taking the case and going into federal court with many of these issues, now that it's been determined on this international level and to the Human Rights Council. But the most important thing, and Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and listeners, is that even without the verdict, but what we have done is organize so many people behind the movement, behind the jurists to get this. So now we have organizations and people involved to move forward with strategies like building a people's senate, you know, actually taking it to court, you know, because Jalil Muthu King always said, we are our own liberators. So this is not an initiative, you know, to be asking the courts to do anything, but it is a movement demanding the courts to do something. And just like the brother said before me, you know, about we need our own health care plan. Well, who the hell is doing that? So now this is putting ourselves in a position where we can organize our own acumen, our own intelligence to be able to do it ourselves rather than asking somebody who doesn't care or represent us in government to do it, because we haven't done it. We have not done it. And now we have an opportunity to do that. We have a strategy to do that. So everybody in their own organizations, we encourage them to go full blast on your own mission statements and continue to do that. We also ask you to really join in hands so we can we're going to start having these people's assemblies across the country. We're going to continue with the momentum of the tribunal that was held, by the way, at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Educational Cultural Center, where Malcolm X was assassinated. We picked up that baton right there where he was killed, right in that auditorium, and we had this tribunal carrying his legacy. And now we have a strategy, that's what I'm saying. So the information will go out tonight, and there's a website, tribunal2021.com, and everything about the jurors, their bios, who they were, everything is on that website, and you're going to be getting that, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph, and everybody listening. It's going to seep into your email box over the next couple of days through different mediums, and you can vet it out, you can search it out, and you can verify all the information. And that's a wonderful report. Along, I don't know if Sister Ann got on, Ann Lamb got on yet to make announcements about Russell Maroon Schultz and David Gilbert. I'm going to leave that for her to do. If she hasn't, I'm going to leave that space for her.
But yes, she
report.
Has talked.
A very good report.
Okay, yes, Ann Lamb was on, and she spoke of Russell Maroon Schultz, and she's going to give us an update the moment there is an update available. And
did she speak
thank
about
you.
David?
Yes.
David Gilbert.
Yes. David
okay,
Gilbert,
enough.
Yes. David
yes,
and.
Okay, I'll rest there. So thank you for the opportunity to share the report. Sister Betty, Brother Ralph, I have to get out. I just got home to my family here, so I'm going to tune in, but I just wanted to give that report to the listening audience. It's a powerful, powerful weekend we had in New York City there.
Brother Jihad, before you go, we want you to understand that one of the things that's happening on our program is people are calling in across the country, and we have one on who's organizing and is calling for a union to create a junior general strike. And you know the unions have always betrayed black people of color.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Black Panthers, I think they're in jail because they were able to unify across the race issue. And I think it's time for us to take that baton that they laid down. And I think this attempt of the tribunal to call attention to the fact that we're all in trouble here is a magnificent one. But if, as you said, if we don't, if we can't unite around the issue of destroying capitalism and destroying fascism, we're not going to succeed.
That is definitely right. And this initiative is being the core of this initiative are those Black Panthers, myself included, Sacred Binga, Jalil Muthu King, Masai Esa-Hosi, Tariq Haskins, Bull Whip, Sister Yasmeen Sutton, you know, the Panthers and the free political prisons that we both can talk about are at the center of this. So everybody that said you supported us, continue to support us in giving God. We are at the support, not some neoliberals or some attorneys that's not attached with us. We were at the core of this, and now we have got the momentum of hundreds of people and dozens of organizations. So that's the call. You'll get the information if you're not familiar with it already. But that's what Betty's talking about. The legacy is being passed to us right now, real time, real work, real action, real results.
Well, thank you for that, Brother Jihad. And I say to the audience, you are just listening to a person who served 27 years in the death camps because he supported the movement of freedom, not only in America, but around the world. And the Mandela Initiative was initiated by a person who's 49 years behind the wall. That is in the American Gulag, the death camps of America, Jaleel Montekin. And so we are a program of activists and supporting activism, and we want to be educated in terms of our involvement in supporting activism. And I must make an addition to the spokesperson who were talking about Yugoslavia. They pitted the Muslims against the Christians, against the communists, who were the main movers and shakers. Another issue, Tito, and why America broke up the union of Yugoslavia Tito had developed. Another story, but this is the same story, different places and different people. Sister Betty.
And before Brother Jihad leaves us, I want to pick up the fact that despite all the Black Lives Matter protests and the torture murder of George Floyd, the killings of people of color by the army of occupation has not stopped. It has increased. So if that doesn't tell you that you're at war, you need to try a different solution, and you can't do it by yourself. I don't know what else will convince you. Without further ado, we're going to go to our brother, who is a staunch supporter of all political business, but especially Mamiya. Henry Hagan, your mic is open, and the people in New Orleans, hang in there, because we're going to try and open up all your mics at the same time. Brother Henry.
Thank you, Sister Betty, and good evening, sisters and brothers. I want to revisit a poem dedicated to Sister Marilyn Buck, and it was written by Russell Maroon Schultz some years ago. In honor of her release and also to recognize her passing. So this is around about 2010-2011. For the martyr, Marilyn Buck. The oppressors say you were the only white in the Black Liberation Army. They seek to sow confusion and division. You were more than that. In Ireland, you would have been in the Irish Republican Army. In Africa, the Front for the Liberation of Mozambique, or the Southwest African People's Organization. In Vietnam, the National Liberation Front. You were the Viet Cong. That's why the oppressors hated and feared you. You were the enemy of the state and oppressive state, but you were always on the side of the oppressed, a dependable ally and friend, our sister, the new woman that Che hoped for, an anti-imperialist freedom fighter. That's why we all loved you. Rest in peace, my sister. A job well done. Russell Maroon Schultz, in tribute to Marilyn Buck. And some people would say, in the old jargon of being sincere, she was down by law. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that education, and activism. Thanks so much, Mr. Henry Higgins.
All right, without further ado, we have to keep moving because we've got Tom and Joel. We hope they're going to be bringing us up to date on the latest event. And I know they also have an analysis of capitalism and the working class. But before we do that, we want to give the people from Louisiana who have joined us this evening and want to give us an update on some critical issues an opportunity to bring us up to date, and I'm going to see if I can't find all of their numbers and open them up at the same time. So if you just bear with me while I try to get these was lined up in a row here. I believe, Brother Dennis, your mic should be open. And Sister Belinda, I'm looking for your number, 985 number. I'm just going to open it up.
One minute. Can you hear me, Sister Betty?
We do. Okay, so your mics are open. We need you to be mindful that we have a lot of people who want to deal with all that's been going on over the past weekend and the crises that are popping up. But
Can you open up Dr. Zena's mic, too, as well? Her last four numbers is 5844. We're excited. There's no doubt that we're on the right show tonight, Sister Betty. And I really appreciate, you know, the callers that have came on and told us about, you know, all these exciting things that's happening in our country. I am so excited. I'm just leaping out of my seat right now after listening to what Brother Jihad said. One of the most important things that he said was that what they have accomplished just within days ago had already been done. I just want people to know that, LUI is a member of the Law Project that did what they done back in October of 2018, and we went to the United Nations and declared that, we as a people here in the United States do not have adequate redress when we're dealing with an organized criminal, abusive, corrupt court systems here in the United States, and the fix is in, and we don't have nowhere else to turn. And I'm so excited about that, because it's time out for us wanting to be in competition with each other and everybody running around doing this and doing that and doing the same old thing, you know, spinning around. It's time for us to unite, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, and come together. You know, I listened to some of the callers you had on here tonight, and I'm telling you, we are moving and shaking, and we want the whole world to know that it's the power is with the people, because what we have accomplished as of October the 25th, we filed the complaint against the Biden administration to let him know that you cannot stand by and twiddle your thumbs and just, you know, talk about you got better things to do when the citizens of the United States are being beat up. You know, people are getting their lives destroyed. Families are being getting their children taken away from them. They're being to report to prison and getting all of their possessions and everything taken away from them with this corruption that's going on in America, and especially when it comes to the weaponized abuse of the legal system. And we're saying the people are going to have to rise up and shut this down. So I wanted Dr. Zena to come in, because, you know, I know we don't have that much time on y'all's show, but I want the people to get fired up, because I'm here to tell you that we're on the move, and nothing is going to stop us from taking our stand and making sure that our voices are heard, and we got them in a box now, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. They damn if they do, and they damn if they don't, because we're not backing up. We're saying that we are the people, and the power is with the people, and we want justice, and it is not, and now we're talking about not your justice, because we're not asking permission anymore. We're demanding that you're going to hear our voices, and we're going to, you know, have a FEMA. You know, we talk about the storms. You know, the storms come in, and then we don't want to take the time out to assess the storm, and then they have to send in FEMA, and FEMA have to, it's like a Federal Emergency Management Agency. We saying that we don't have nowhere else to turn when we are suffering these type of atrocities and this type of tyranny that is treason upon the people here in the United States, and it's time for us to unite and come together. So thank you, and I want Dr. Zena to come in, because we got this very important announcement where people need to go, and they need to support, they need to join up, we need to unite, we all need to come together. That's what the establishment is banking on, is that we keep on running around doing, you know, our own thing, everybody, you know, over here doing that, and at some point in time, we all got to come together, and we got to gang up on them like they've been ganging up on us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Belinda Parker Brown of Louisiana United. Look that up. And with the microphone of...
Dr. Crenshaw, your mic is
Dr.
open.
Dr. Crenshaw is open.
And Brother Dennis, yours is also.
Thank you so much.
Let Dr. Zena go first, and then I have the final say.
Thank
okay.
you so much. So what we have done is we have created America United International. So what we have, the United States has been unresponsive to the United Nations determination that there are not effective avenues of redress. The Trump administration didn't even take issue with that on behalf of the United States. They acknowledged that when you're talking about a weaponization of the U.S. legal system, there's not adequate redress. It's just a shell game. We literally spend decades of our life chasing some type of meaningful relief of fair and impartial administration of justice. And the determination was that, you know, they have other priorities, even though they recognize how much of a crisis it is to be in that predicament. We reached out to the Biden administration in June and said, is this going to remain the position of the United States? And they were unresponsive. So America United International is basically the unresponsiveness of government has triggered the collective right of the people to fashion their own terms of government. We're taking our cues from, you know, a document that was never intended to be a benefit to most Americans, let alone the blacks who were brought to this country, the Africans who were brought to this country, but we're still using the language of the Declaration of Independence, and it says under circumstances of abject tyranny, it is the natural right, is the inherent right of the people to change the terms of government, and even, they even countenance overthrow the terms of government. So Ms. Belinda talks about our need for FEMA, and what we're doing is because the Biden administration has been unresponsive, we're fashioning our own FEMA. We're fashioning our own avenues of relief with the blessings of the terms of the Declaration of Independence. And so it's critical for everyone to understand that this collective right has been triggered, and then it's up to us to make a determination as to the terms of government each of us propose. And we don't have to get any more consent or cooperation from the United Nations because they've already given us the determination that we need, that what this country provides is ineffective. So at this point, it's our turn. We're not just petitioning government. We're changing the terms of government. And each of us have the opportunity to do that within the context of our own ultimate goals and priorities.
Thank you for that. And would you repeat that organization that from Louisiana United International? Say it again.
Yes. And we're the campaign, which is a sponsored by Louisiana United International, is now America United International. And you can find it at AmericaUnitedInternational.net. We're fashioning our own relief at this point, our own FEMA.
What I would like to suggest is that I think Brother Jihad is still on. You know, he is talking about a Senate, and I think the – four of you, Brother Dennis, Brother Jihad, Sister Belinda, and you, Dr. Crenshaw, we need to figure out how this will relate to the Senate that we hope will come out of the Human Rights Tribunal. Brother Jihad,
exactly.
Did you? Okay. Brother Jihad, you heard me?
Yes, I heard you. I just unmuted myself. Yes. Yes, it's discussion to be done, but we already have a model. And Sister Belinda, you know, which I know very well, my dynamite sister, now we have, you know, unity in theory is good. But now we're going to have unity in action because this is a major project, and that's going to really bring, I've met so many brothers since I've been talking about it in the spirit of unity and solidarity. But now that we've all been involved with this, that level of spirit and solidarity has been exponentialized, and that goes for everybody that's been working on this. And so I only look forward to us really building. This was a major opportunity, and we need to really, as one brother said, Bobby Sue, you know, we have to seize the time.
Absolutely, Brother Jihad, and that's the reason why this is not about, you know, competition or anything like that. It's about us coming together to win for our people. This is a code blue. You know, we didn't push the red button on this. All we're saying is that, you know, we want to make sure that we have the sustainability and we have the manpower and the resources that we need, and I want to use big word like resources, but finances that we need to push this thing all the way through. And it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us that really understand what this is about. You know, we're not going to stand back and wait for them to do nothing for us, because they never intended to do nothing for us in the first place. This is genocide upon black people, black and brown people in the United States of America. And now since they ran out of blackness, they're going for everybody else, the white ones, the Asians, anybody and everybody now. So we got to understand that we cannot wait for this. We got to do this now.
And we also have all the power that we need now.
The reason I opened up your mic is because we have not seen our the structure that we hope to come out of this tribunal, but it is clear that people are all thinking along the same lines. It's the doing
that
is all. And so, Brother Jihad, I just keep referencing you because I know this is what we talked about. Now the real work begins. Bringing these, tying these strings together. Brother Dennis, your mic is open.
Black Power March on the White House demands black community control of the police. Release political prisoners. What? 13th Annual Black People's March on the White House. Deepening the resistance to police terror. Honoring our political prisoners and prisoners of war. Black community control of the police. Who? Black is Black Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparation. When? Saturday, November the 6th, 2021 at 12 o'clock noon. Sunday, November the 7th, virtual conference, 10 a.m. Where? Malcolm X Park, Meridian Hill Park in Washington, D.C. Contact Secretary Elikia Ngoma at 786-505-985-989. That's 786-505-9859. Vice Chair Lisa Davis, 973-517-1405, or email info@blackisblackcoalition.org. Deepening the resistance to police terror, honoring our political prisoners and prisoners of war, black community control of police. The Black is Back Coalition, under the leadership of Chairman Omari Yesitela, Chair of the BIBC, has taken up the mantle to advance the struggle to the end, to end the relentless police murders of our people, and to liberate our freedom fighters from the United States prison death camps. As Yesitela explains, the colonial enslavement of our people was the bridge between European feudalism and capitalism that wreaks havoc on the happiness, lives, and resources of all the peoples of the world. On Saturday, November the 6th, 2021, the Black is Back Coalition will begin their 13th annual Black People's March on the White House with a rally at Malcolm X Park, followed by a march through the heart of the Colonial Capitalist Center, ending with another rally at Lafayette Park at the White House. And on Sunday, November the 7th, the coalition will host day two of this 13th annual event virtually via Zoom. Partial list of the speakers includes Omari Yesitela, Coalition Chair and Leader of the African People's Socialist Party, Belinda Parker Brown, CEO, Louisiana United International, Yejide Oromala, President, African National Women's Organization, Ralph Porner, Chair, Political Prisoner Working Group and Lynn Stewart Committee, Salam Adafo, National Black United Front, Betty Davis, New Abolitionist Movement Chair, Education Work Group, Matamela Odom, Black Community Control of the Police Working Group, Benjamin Prado, Union Del Barrio, Zaki Baruti, Universal African People's Organization. Join the resistance to police terror at Malcolm X Park on November the 6th, 2021 at 12 noon as the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace and Reparations, founded in 2009, hosts its 13th annual rally, march and rally on the White House, and a virtual conference on Sunday, November the 7th, 2021 at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. To register today and for more information, go to www.blackisbackcoalition.org. That's www.blackisbackcoalition.org or call 786-505-9859 and register for the November 7th, 10 a.m. Zoom conference at www.blackisbackcoalition.org. Uhuru.
Well, all Brother Jihad, I hope
you must wear a mask.
We're hoping that you
yes.
will be, you can't be in Washington, D.C., that you will at least be a part of the Zoom conference on the political prisoner panel with Brother Ralph. We knew you were very busy with this Dollar Tribunal, but we're hoping that you will be able to launch with the 17 organizations that belong to the Black is Back Coalition your discussion in terms of necessity for us to unify around this strategy. So I cannot thank you enough for staying on the call. I know you had to get off, but I'm glad you stayed
actually,
on.
I was listening. I was doing a couple of things, but I'm listening. And yes, sis, I will tune in. I can't excuse me, physically be. I will tune in because the Black is Back Coalition has done so much. It is a true example about how unity and practice effectuate itself and to bring in the whole apparatus. And all I can say, I'm going to see the expression on Chairman Romali's face and his beautiful smile. When you see the commentaries of the jurists, they just didn't find them guilty of genocide. They have comments. It's like a judge order, you know, rendering a decision on a case, and then you have the judge's opinion. You know, everybody has something to say, acknowledging in depth what we were talking about. And even at the end, when the verdict was read, even one of the jurors from India pledged her support of our movement. This was profound. And you all will get that information, sending it out tonight, and it'll seep into your inboxes through everybody that gets it and share it with one another. We're going to blast it to the media and everywhere. So when you get it, you can share it with your next. And so, yes, the Black is Back Coalition has done consistently profound work in unifying and networking, and look forward to their definite involvement in this whole process. Matter of fact, it's necessary. It's mandatory.
Well, thank you so much for that. And we see that we have an update on
Well, we're not sure, so we're going to open up Ann's mic to see if she has any further updates on either Schultz or Brother Gilbert before we go to Joel.
Ann, your mic is open.
Yeah, no further updates at this moment. David, they had said November 30th it would be his release date, but I think it would probably be a little sooner than that. That's a pretty long time.
Okay.
So we'll see
thank
what
you.
Happens with definitely been
we're
a pleasure, so and talk to Joe.
And look forward to hearing an update from you before the program ends.
And I want to tell people to be prepared for December 11th in New York City. Jericho
yes.
is planning a very, very special event. Correct, Ann?
That is correct for International Human Rights Day.
Facebook, but people who are in other parts can participate, hopefully.
Yes.
All right. Brother Tom, be prepared, and Brother Val, Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Professor Joel, educate us. Your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about this COVID thing. I've expressed opinion. I think it's pretty well documented and proven fact, actually, not a mere opinion, but that the COVID is biological warfare, which is now being operated around the globe. And it's not only a disease, but it's an agenda. And the reason I believe why so many people are reluctant to take this vaccine, there's never been this kind of a resistance to a vaccine and the kind of coercion to take the vaccine that I can remember. I don't know about the initial smallpox era. But I know that they're putting tremendous pressure on people both ways. You can lose your job, you can lose your livelihood, and so on, number one. And the other thing is they're giving out $100 in one place and $50 in another place to take the vaccine. And a lot of us believe, and when I say us, I don't just mean people of our similar opinion. In fact, many people that are very left-wing have a tendency to put too much faith in official science, which can be very different from real science. And what that means is that people in a panic and frightened situation tend to rally around the authorities. And in this case, there's a very large number of exceptions to that, because people feel, after everything that's happened, the Vietnam War, the Kennedy assassination, 9/11, they feel we've been lied to again and again and again. And people feel that people have deep down feeling, even people that believe in the vaccine completely and they're uncritical about it, and people who are rallying around deep down. One of the reasons that there's so much polarization around the vaccine and whether it should be mandatory or not, with the degree of anger, is that people feel deep inside their own doubts, and they're trying to squelch their own doubts by yelling a little bit louder and demonizing those that have a different position. But the thing is that COVID has an agenda of biological warfare. It's not only a disease, it's an agenda. And many people suspect that the next step in the agenda is the vaccine itself. And they feel that the vaccine is designed to do long-range harm, not that long-range, you know, maybe 2-3 years. And other people say, well, look, it's been tested already, it's been given to millions of people, and there have been thousands of recorded deaths soon after the vaccine. But one recent notable one was Colin Powell. He was vaccinated, and everything else, he died of COVID.
Scientific articles now. In the beginning of our program, you gave us some places where we could go and read up further. I'm getting texts from the audience. They would like to know where to go to read besides Gary Null. Let's face it, you know, he has a bad record with black people. So can we have some more of your scholarly data that you gave us in the very beginning when COVID first broke out?
Well,
can you give us some
references? I don't have it right in front of me, but I can pull it together for next week. But I want to say this, that even the U.S. government officially now is putting out a lot of statements indicating that this monstrous disease virus was created in a lab. As long as they can blame it on China, they're willing to say that. And that's what they don't say is that the U.S. was funding the Chinese lab that they say this came out of, and that small number of cases were reported in the United States before it broke out in Wuhan. So this comes from the United States. Anything that was done in any other country was bought and paid for and kept secret by the U.S. establishment, because there was a temporary ban on gain-of-function research, meaning training viruses to hop from one animal, such as a bat, to infect humans, which the virus wasn't adapted to do. So they changed the virus in order to enable it to, and this kind of research was temporarily banned under the Obama administration. And then other labs were contacted around the world and funded to do this kind of work. And this is adequately documented, and it's even coming up in Congress. That's why Collins, the head of the the NIH had to quit because he was caught lying to Congress about gain-of-function research. What was he trying to cover up? Nothing innocent. And I think that's why the distrust now is greater than it ever was before. That there's never been a situation where there was so much universal distrust across the whole political spectrum and among those who aren't even that political, that they know that they are not trying to help us with the vaccine, that they're trying to kill a lot of us, and a lot of them have spoken about the importance of reducing the population, so including the multi-billionaire Bill Gates.
Thank you so much for that.
Try to get the documentation in next week.
Well,
yes.
Could you give us some more information on gain of function? You mentioned gain of function. Can you give us some more on that?
Well, the gain of function means transforming a virus that infects other animals, such as the coronavirus. This particular variety is very, it seems to be derived from a bat virus. And they say, many of those who even deny that it was lab-made, they say, well, it looks like it jumps from bats to people. And some viruses can do that once in a while. Now, gain of function means that you take a virus in a lab and you train that virus and enable that virus to infect humans. And what it usually means is that our cells have a cell membrane. It doesn't allow anything to penetrate that cell membrane, except viruses become adapted to be able to find openings and to be able to tear through the cell membrane. And it's like a lock and a key. If you can't get through the locked door, then you don't have the key, then you might be out of luck. But if you get a key, then you can get in. And it's like a key and a lock between a virus and an animal cell or a human cell. And if you give that virus the key, or you train that virus, which already has a key, let's say to a bat cell, to refurbish that key and transform it into a key that fits a human cell, and it's called an ACE receptor on the human cell. And
Joel,
if you,
thank you. We got the drift, and I realize that this COVID issue is going to have to be a total program, and I want to put the political along with the physical evidence, and the government is hiding the whole issue of biological warfare behind this COVID issue. The COVID issue is real. People are dying, but we must examine where this came from, what it is all about. And I think we're going in circles here. We're getting a lot of truth, but we're not getting to the root of the problem. And I think when somebody says American control of the universe is a part of it, we're going to have to get into the issue of how COVID is used in this, how it came about, what it is all about. And we're going to have to put that off until next week. I hope everybody gets their information, their scientific information, their political information, their political knowledge to handle this problem of COVID, because it is still, it's growing. It's a growing problem, even though they say we are on the back end of it. It will soon be over. Do not believe it. It is just beginning. We have Tom Syracuse. We have others who are going to give us more information, and so that we can continue this struggle for liberation. And liberation requires activism and information. Brother Tom, your microphone is open.
Thank you very much. Since one of the themes of this blog tonight is analysis of the the situation of the working class, both white, black, and the unions. I would like to talk somewhat about that. Going back to the Great Depression of the 1930s, not that there weren't previous depressions, busts and booms, a part of the contradictions of capitalism, but in the 1930s, the growth of militant unions and the growth of the Communist Party and the Communist Party influence in many of these unions scared the hell out of the ruling capitalist class. To them, this was a much more serious concern than the aggressive Nazi militarism that was taking place in Germany and in Italy. So during the Depression, the unions, not that there were no unions before, but they were limited to white skilled workers, and they were rather small. But in the 1930s, you had militant unions, like I said, who were actually going on strike and demanding that they be recognized, and even taking over a factory, sit-ins, and this scared the hell out of the capitalist ruling class. And the Roosevelt administration decided to make some compromises, and he recognized the right of these unions to exist. Even though the Roosevelt administration made certain reforms like unemployment compensation and Social Security, the Depression did not end until World War II, and then everyone was either drafted or they were working in these armament plants. After World War II, the United States emerged with an economy that was really untouched by the war. We were never bombed. We had complete control over the world markets, except for the Soviet bloc. England, France, Germany, Italy, all these countries were devastated, and the United States had to start to build them up, because there were communist parties in all of these countries, and so what happened was, for the first time, there was full employment, and there was the working class, particularly the white working class, saw a marked improvement in their situation. In the up until the 1950s, about 40% of the working class were in unions. Today, it's less than 10%. And in building up the economies of these other countries, what happened was that these countries actually became our competitors. American part of capitalism, of course, depends upon imperialism, wars, and the Vietnam War saw a huge defeat for American imperialism. Now, here again, there were rebellions on the college campuses led by white students who could afford to go to college, and that left the white and black working class. They were the ones that wound up. They couldn't get deferments, and they wound up going to Vietnam. That was Vietnam turned out to be a turning point for American imperialism, and we were literally chased out of Vietnam, and that was a great defeat. Well, in the 1970s, you had the oil embargo, which brought about another weakness in the American economy, and by the 1970s, capitalism and the condition of the American working class, white and black, began to deteriorate greatly. Many blacks had come north during the war or right after the war to work in factories, but the CIO, which was organized did accept blacks in the union, but they were limited to the dirtiest and back-breaking jobs. So racism and classism was still and is still a huge factor in among the working white working class and in the unions. Well, now we have a situation where imperialism has experienced huge setbacks. First, it was Vietnam, and then it it was in the Middle East. Despite our efforts to control Iraq and Afghanistan, that has failed, and Afghanistan is another huge setback for American imperialism. The fact of the matter is that capitalism is on the skids, it cannot solve. In fact, it is usually it's largely responsible for the crisis, all of the crises that we have today, pitting people against each other, racism, the collapse of the climate. It cannot, and like I said, it's largely responsible for exacerbating these crises. There is some bright spots here. However, we have the first Wall Street in downtown New York, and then we have the Black Lives Matter. We had the rebellion, the black rebellions in the cities after Martin Luther King was assassinated, and the Black Panthers, and all of this is indicative of the capitalist system. Really is imploding, and the only the thing is that somehow we have to somehow get the white and black working class to realize that their interests are the same, and that they do amount a multiracial movement to get rid of capitalism. That is our big challenge. Thank you.
Well,
very
thank
much.
You, Tom. That was quite an overview of the American labor movement. Next 8299, your mic is open.
Yes, good evening. Good evening. You know, along the lines of how capitalist and which is pretty much the end and the means of our, you know, of our system, how it continues to exploit not just America but even the world. We remember another brother, you know, Muhammad Ali Clay, you know, who was finally returned to the spotlight, to his dignity, after being 3 years barred from his vocation, pretty much, you know, from boxing, because he chose not to embrace the capitalistic, militaristic war in Vietnam, as we all know from history. You know, and so that's how we pay the price if we dare go against the system, against the capitalistic, brutal capitalism, not just mere capitalism, but brutal capitalism. Not just, you know, even brothers who speak out against the atrocities for brothers around the world they pay a price, whether it be an invocation or whether they be, you know, like even Julian Assange, you know, right now he's, you know, he's in the crosshairs again because he's exposing the brutal capitalist. Last week, of course, I think I already mentioned, you know, it was nauseating exactly a week ago today when the media and even celebrity TV from left to right, it just shows, you know, that we all just pawns, just players with this division, how they were celebrating and extolling, exalting, virtually canonizing, you know, Colin Powell, who again, you know, manifest, you know, the brutal atrocities where 200,000 lives were lost overseas because, again, of the of our capitalistic ventures, so to speak. So, you know, it's. I mean, sure, we celebrate today, you know, the release of another brother, but we got to keep in mind also the other brothers, you know, who are still suffering. You know, all because, as the show has, you know, has reminded us, you know, the pure pursuit of inhumane capitalism. And so, you know, it's soul appeasing actually that we can get on this forum, you know, even though it's only once a week, you know, and embrace, you know, our brotherhood. You know, because surely when we recognize this and when we exchange, you know, and we remind ourselves about not just the present, but even the history and the continuing future, you know, it is our efforts, our reminders that brings us some sort of solace. And so, you know, I am grateful, as I'm sure many of us are, you know, for this forum. And let us continue to uplift each other by reminding us and by offering hope, you know, even in our camaraderie, that if that's the only hope we can, you know, we can hope to attain in the immediate. But of course, as the events show today, you know, it's these efforts that also bring about, you know, actual intangible results, you know, small as they are, but we must also celebrate the small victories. And so with that, my dear brothers and sisters, you know, I wish you, you know, a good evening, and I wish you a continued good, you know, good celebration and also a good week. And until we meet again next time, you know, I am yours faithfully. Thank you.
Well,
so much.
Thank you so much for that. It's a proper ending to our program. That is the message. And along with that, I must say, over the years that we have said, Black history is merely the history they left out. So let us not leave out anything. Let us say we want the real history of America, because so much has been left out. And even those of us who understand and work for justice are learning things. One of the things that I noticed was not mentioned when the New Deal, the only way they got it through was when they agreed that the black workers would get less than the white workers. We didn't bring out the issue that when the floods came along the Mississippi River, they said, if we allow the black workers to evacuate to the north when we know the floods are coming, and they will walk if that's all they have to do to get to out of the flood zone, they would never come back. And so the U.S. government used the army to keep black workers along the levees. And when the levees broke, the soldiers that were there to keep the black workers there, they died too. They should have united with the black workers to get out of there. That should have been a major lesson to white America. But it is not. It is not taken, because we haven't told that truth. And so I want truth in history. Tell it all. Not black history, not white history, not government history, not corporate history. All of history. And we got a bit of it tonight. And we hope to always bring you the truth of what America is about on these programs. And we also hope to be able to organize actively to make our understanding of what America has always been about to change it. Sister Betty.
I just want to make you aware that the people from Louisiana are trying to line up all their ducks in a row and bring down Goliath. And that's what all of our responsibilities are, from wherever you are. There is a folk tale about a cow in a barn, and all the different creatures in the barn are saying and trying to describe that cow. So the bird that's up on top says, well, it's a long thing with a back. And the mice that are in the straw says, well, it's something with four hooves. And the cat that's in the front of the barn says, well, it's something with horns and a face. We've all got a different version of what this oppression is, but we all know we've got to deal with that cow, and that's what this program is about. Brother Ralph?
Good night, my brothers and sisters. Thanks for spending the time with us. I hope you have been educated the same as I am getting educated. Look forward to seeing you all next week. Much love.
Thank you so much.
Good night.